Welcome to the Brave Little Podcast, coming from Dallas, Texas and Sacramento, California. Here's Skylar Teo and David Stauffer.
Welcome to the Brave Little Podcast. Back on that Star Wars train, we are once again in for a special treat because I'm here to talk about The Empire Strikes Back with my own two brothers, Preston, who is 5 years older than me, and Brandon, who is 5 years younger than me. So I've been wanting to have the pod for a long time. These are the guys that I grew up with, obviously, because they're my brothers, but these are the guys I grew up with loving Star Wars, certainly my older brother being the one driving that. And Brandon just kind of hopped on that train with us. But anyway, guys, thanks for being on my podcast.
Thank you for having us.
Yes.
It's a pleasure.
Is it?
We were kind of forced to do this, but I'm
still kind of stoked. No, we're Brave Little listeners.
Yes, are you guys Brave Little fans of the show?
We are, yes.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
I follow you guys on Twitter.
My own brothers? Oh my gosh. Well, thanks, guys.
I contributed to your Kickstarter, so.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much.
You had a Kickstarter, is that true?
Yeah.
That
true? Oh yeah, if anyone else wants to contribute, it's not too late. www.kickstarter.com/Brave Little Kickstarter. That's actually not, don't go to that URL. It does not exist.
It's a GoFundMe.
But, so like I said, today is the Empire Pods Back. And we're going to go all into this. There's a lot to say. We've got a lot to go over. And I'm going to try not to drop another hour and 45 minute episode on you. But at the top, before I get all into Star Wars, I figure I get my sponsors out of the way. Obviously, MoviePass, longtime sponsor of the pod from the get-go. So we want to thank MoviePass for that. If you go to MoviePass.com, you can get a subscription to be able to see one movie per day. So if you're a cinephile like me and my brothers, it's totally worth it. We also actually, DawnOfTheThread.com still is and will forever remain a sponsor of this podcast. I maybe shouldn't have said forever because I'm not sure. I'm just kidding. DawnOfTheThread.com. We've mentioned it before. But we actually have a new sponsor. Not officially a sponsor yet because it's actually an app on made for and coded for the new Apple TV. It's just about to be released. It's not released yet. So I'll go into more detail when they do release it. But it's actually... it's a company that's built an app that is essentially like a trivia, like a Jeopardy style trivia game. And it comes with these different like category packs, like sports, movies, and music. And so they actually reached out to the pod, asked us to contribute trivia to the movies pack, which we did. Again, it's going to drop soon on the App Store. What's really cool about it is everyone can use their iPhone as essentially their buzzer for the game. So you can get a room full of people with their iPhones, they can connect in, and then they have like A, B, C, and D on their iPhone. And so when the question comes up, it's whoever hits it first, gets the answer correct. And, you know, there's no actual buzzer you have to hit and try to, raise your hand and figure out, hey, who's first? Like, no, it's in there. And it even tells you how quickly you buzzed in, like each player. And so it's really, I've been able to actually test it and do several rounds of it. It's super fun.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Oh, it's
great. I'm totally on board.
Yeah. So we helped contribute to the movies section of it. And so what they're actually going to do is they're going to give us a code for a free download. They haven't announced the pricing yet. From what I understand, it'll be fairly low cost to buy, and it'll come with the three categories. And then they will likely offer additional subjects for an in-app purchase, I don't want to say price because I have no idea what it's going to be, but fairly low cost, which I honestly think is worth it because it's a total blast to play. But they're going to give us a code that we'll read once it's released. It'll likely be the next pod. When we read that code, what will happen is you can go to iTunes and punch that in and you get the app for free, and it'll be whoever does it first. So if you're like the first one to listen to the episode, yes. One to get the number, you get the app for free. Again, it is the new Apple TV, so you're going to want to want that. Yeah. But the app itself, I guess I will tell you, it's called Know It All. And then again, it's close to release, and we'll keep you informed. But they're a new sponsor of the pod. We're really happy to have both helped them with some questions, and also we're happy to have them affiliated with the Brave Little Podcast. So, all right, Star Wars: The Empire Strikes Back. This movie, widely considered the greatest Star Wars film of all time.
Agreed.
I mentioned in the last podcast that I've probably considered Empire Strikes Back the best Star Wars movie for most of my life. Like, but only recently I've really come around to, you know, Star Wars 1977 as my favorite. And I still stand by that. But admittedly, when I'm rewatching this movie and taking notes, it's like, oh, this is so good. Like, oh, I could probably be talked into actually changing my mind again. I won't. I'm going to stay firm and see how this works out. But you, Preston, so, Preston, you said it is your favorite.
Oh, yes.
And why is that?
It is. Well, originally it was Return of the Jedi as a little kid because, all right, Ewoks I thought were cool.
Yeah.
despite popular belief. And they made booby traps for AT-ST chicken walkers, and that was just kind of cool and fun when I was a kid. But Empire Strikes Back, so serious, so many awesome things in that movie. The first movie to really do an awesome cliffhanger that probably frustrated a lot of people when it really came out, but got everyone super pumped for it.
Well, we know because we have a father that hates this movie.
Yeah.
Not because it's not good, because it's, you know... Quality has nothing to do with his hatred.
He went and saw it in the theater when it came out. He's like, That's it? It's over? That's the dumbest movie I've ever seen.
Yeah. Yeah. And in fact, he had to wait 3 years to know. It's like, Dad, Han was getting out of that carbonite.
Yeah, no, he wasn't going to stay frozen
there. There was no Star Wars world where the dude just stays in carbonite and they just kind of forget about him. And they're just kind of like, well, I guess that's just kind of his plot in life. Or lot in life. Well... Also, he's got a great plot of land right there in Jabba's castle, right up against that. Well, I'm trying to save myself from saying plot instead of lot, and I'm failing. But anyway, yeah, our dad hated it. But like, you know, as a little kid, it was kind of like, oh, my dad hates it. This must not be the best one. Until I actually started having a real taste in movies, and then I watched it again, thinking, oh, wait a second,
the movie is actually
this is.
Probably for multiple reasons.
So what, yeah. Brandon, is it your favorite?
It's probably, I don't know, growing up, when I was like younger, it might not have been my favorite because to me it seemed a little more dark.
Okay.
But, you know, obviously, you know, growing up being a little more, you know, mature, I definitely enjoy it. It might be on the same level with A New Hope for me just because that was kind of like the start of it all. But definitely big favorite. And I definitely think that they go like more into like, the Force type stuff, especially with like everything with Yoda, I thought was like awesome.
Yeah,
as a kid, like this, like oh, this Jedi mastermind, and that I was like, that was a whole cool concept for me. So
yeah, so you mentioned the darkness is the dark one. Okay, that's like frequently cited as oh, it's the dark Star Wars film. What's interesting about that is I don't necessarily disagree, and I'll go over the reasons why people say that it's why I think people say it's the dark one, and and why it might be, but. It depends on how you define what dark is, because a lot more people die in A New Hope than in Empire Strikes Back.
It's true.
For example, Luke's aunt and uncle literally get torched.
Burned
and to death. And you see their skeletons, and not just your skeletons. It's what looks like could be burning flesh still on the bone. Like, I mean, it's not like it's definitely violent.
It's not PG.
It is not a PG scene.
Yeah.
And thankfully they hadn't come up with the PG-13 rating yet. So, booyah. That's pretty dark. Made all the more darker that Luke didn't give a crap. He might have given a crap a half a second, but then he immediately remembered, hey, I don't have to do the harvest this year. I can get those dang power converters.
Yes.
Finally, no one can stop me now.
Joined the rebellion. I got this really old guy that gave me a laser sword. Yes.
He seemed to have gotten over their death pretty quickly. But also... In the next scene, there is a C-3PO carrying dead Jawas and putting them in a big pile, like a bonfire of dead Jawas. Like, also, a lot of Jawas went down there. Not to mention, an entire planet of people gets destroyed.
That's true.
And while I'm not sure what the current population of Alderaan was at its destruction, it did look a lot like Earth. So I'm going to go with 7 billion people just got eviscerated, right? Pretty dark. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of other things. I mean, Leia got, like, tortured by that droid with the syringe. And I mean, there's really going to it. There's, like, quite a bit happens in A New Hope. Yet, Empire Strikes Back is the dark one. Mm-hmm. Now, along the same topic of that, of how different The Empire Strikes Back is than A New Hope, we have a director now that is not George Lucas, which is a little bit surprising, with given the success of Star Wars, that he handed the reins over to someone else for The Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. Of course, there's a million rumors about how he was way less involved in The Empire Strikes Back and all these other things because sometimes George Lucas can be George Lucas.
Unfortunately.
But we have Irvin Kershner, who comes in and just does a terrific job directing this film. Like, I'm so glad, you know, even if it was Lucas willingly choosing to have someone else do it, like, I'm just glad that he was humble enough and that he picked Irvin Kershner, because it's a much better directed film than A New Hope. I will say that.
Yes.
But the reason why it's considered the darkest, there's the obvious stuff. But first off, this movie's the one that everyone considers the best, starts off with the good guys having to flee yet another base. Like it's you start off with this big, huge battle sequence with these really cool, with the tow cables, amazing soundtrack. You got the droids. I was going to ask you guys for your impression of that droid, but I figured I'm just going to jump in and hope you guys follow suit. And you did.
All right, now let's do tom-toms.
that's pretty good.
That nailed it. I can't Preston, top that.
By the way. I should take credit since you can't see who's doing that. But I don't have a great track record of Star Wars noise sound effects.
Your TIE Fighter, please?
Yeah. Alec challenged me on a new pod to make the TIE Fighter sound effect, which was a decision that I regret to this day.
Should we do it again?
No, definitely not. Nope. You could actually roll the tape back on that one. I don't know if you've not listened to that episode yet. But
I have not, no.
Listen to it. I crash and burn. Like a TIE Fighter. Much like a TIE Fighter, I just completely get blown up.
At first, I thought you were going to say, like a good TIE Fighter, State Farm is there.
Yeah, and like a good TIE Fighter, State Farm is there. So this episode is also brought to you by State Farm. That's a good segue. So
we'll start with Brandon's TIE Fighter sound effect.
I won't make you do it.
I'm going to take a pass on this one.
Okay. Preston, you want
to
do TIE Fighter?
I'm tempted to try.
Okay, Preston, go for it, please. Go. Mic is yours. Nice.
That was better than what I've heard.
So that was the womp. That was the tauntaun or the wampa. But now that we want the TIE Fighter, I'm kidding. That was actually pretty good. World's better than what I did, which was like a very mouthy, not very throaty attempt.
Yeah. It's like a high pitched squeal. Millennium Falcon's hyperdrive powering down. How about that? Or failing, which failed many times in this movie. Which,
ooh, yeah,
there's at least four times,
three or four times.
Yeah,
yeah.
There was at least three times.
At least three times that the hyperdrive does not work when they need it to work.
Twice, and then one with Lando, and
yeah. So anyway, we're back at Hoth. Okay, and we got the droids drop. You get the AT-ATs, the AT, and then I was gonna say AT-STs. No, just the AT-ATs, right?
There's both.
Okay, yeah. I just watched this movie, and of course I don't know what I'm talking about, but. It's a really cool sequence, but ultimately the good guys lose. They get completely taken over, and they leave. The good guys don't win a single battle in this movie. They lose every single time.
Literally, the Empire winning.
You think you're safe on Cloud City, and you are not safe. You think Lando's got your back. He does not have your back. Luke gets his hand cut off. And he learns that the guy that he thought killed his father is actually his father. And then he takes a leap. What seems like should be certain death, but
there was a tube there.
But there was this McDonald's slide that opened up just in time for him to just break his fall and slide through. When I was a kid watching that scene, by the way, I remember thinking oh yeah, that would suck to learn that Vader was your father, but at least you get to go on that ride. At least you get to slide down that tube, because they're like, hey, it's not all bad, I just got to find my hand now.
Yeah. And then later they took that tube and they decorated the inside of it with a little bit of mud and used it for Goonies.
Seriously. Also, you have Han Solo, everyone's favorite smuggler, get frozen in carbonite, and it ends with that having a lot of uncertainty that we mentioned earlier about what exactly will happen, even though we know he'll get saved. It's just we don't really know what's to come. And people had to wait like 3 years to find out.
Yep.
So they lose every battle.
Yeah.
In fact, you're even when they think they're safe, like I said, in Cloud City, or when they think they're safe on an asteroid, they're actually inside of an enormous worm alien. You know what I mean? Like, it's just not good. Plus, let's be honest, Luke on Dagobah kind of has a bad time.
Yeah.
I think he had more negative experiences than positive on Dagobah, but it was obviously an essential, like, essential chapter for his development and his journey. But I did ask for you guys to come prepared with your top five scenes and moments from Empire Strikes Back. I do want to keep, like, speaking about the film broadly because there's a lot to dissect, but I have a feeling as we discuss our five scenes, we're going to get a lot around to a lot of it. So let's do it. If you want to start us off, Preston, with your number five.
I'll start with my number five. Oh, we're ranking them in order. I'm actually just have mine in chronological order.
Okay, that's fine.
I just picked blank five. So
is there a favorite? Actually, I'm going to have Brandon go first, maybe think about it, because I want you to at least save your favorite.
My favorite.
Yeah.
Got it.
Okay. So, Brandon, number five.
Okay, so my number five would definitely be the Hoth battle, but more specifically, I think the bringing down the AT-AT with the tow cables.
Yeah.
Because I don't remember what game this was. But there was a Star Wars game where that was, like, one of my favorite parts. Is flying in a snow speeder and just, like, shooting a tow cable at their legs and just doing circles around an AT-AT till it drops. I was like, that was one of my favorite parts of the game. And, like, like watching that again, I was like, it was, like, nostalgic for me. I was like, I love that scene.
It's the David versus Goliath type of thing. Like, those AT-ATs are enormous and powerful, and blasters don't work on those shields. You know, like, and then the fact that you can just kill a tow cable, and it's like, ah, oh, they overlooked that. You know, like, oh, dang it.
I believe it was Shadows of the Empire on Nintendo 64.
It was Shadows of the Empire. Yep.
Definitely. Yep. Fantastic. That was it. That was a fantastic game.
Great game.
That was
followed closely by Rogue Squadron, also on Nintendo 64. Both classics. But yeah, that was Shadows of the Empire. What reminds me of the whole AT-AT thing. This is our first time seeing more weaponry of the Empire, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We had the Death Star before, which was fully operational until Luke had something to say about it. and then you have like the Hoth scene opens up, and it's almost like we can forgive the fact that the bad guys win because they kind of had the dopest machinery. Yeah. It's like, well, they did bring those things in. And what's funny is, I'm gonna be honest, when I first saw the Lord of the Rings Return of the King for the first time and the Battle of Minas Tirith, when they bring in like the elephants, it's like, well, these are their AT-ATs. Like, this is what that is. Let's be honest with ourselves. Those are the AT-ATs. Like, it's an ode to that. Which reminds me, the whole tow cable sequence with Luke and whatnot, I was gonna mention that we should probably name this episode the DAC Memorial Podcast. R.I.P. Dak, Luke's co-pilot.
Oh,
in the back,
yes.
In the back of Dak, who was like, I feel like I could take on the whole Empire myself. It's like, oh, he's dead.
Sorry, you're gonna, dead. You're gonna get shot in the face, and then an AT-AT is gonna step on you.
Yeah. Oh,
and
I know.
You're gonna get stomped on.
Yeah. Not only are you gonna die in that thing, but you're gonna get crushed.
Yeah.
And Luke's just gonna run away from the scene.
Yeah. He's not even gonna bother to.
Yeah. Play out. It's almost like. Like when Dak dies and Luke's still flying, he's like, Dak, and he learns, you know, kind of turns over his shoulder and realizes he's dead. He almost is like more annoyed and bothered than anything. Like, oh,
he's like, oh, well, like, there goes my tow cable.
Oh, great, Dak. Like, you couldn't have just, you know, kept it together. You know, like,
he didn't even bother to check chance. He didn't even bother to check to see if he was still alive.
He literally could have been unconscious and then just died later by being smashed. But Luke's like, well.
Yeah, when Luke's leaving, he like leans over the shoulder to grab like his lightsaber before he runs out.
He grabs his saber.
He's like, oh, I gotta grab my lightsaber.
He takes Dak's
wallet. Never mind. You know, Dak might still be alive. Dak's might just be
like,
unconscious.
Oh, he's like, shh, Dak, you are dead. They'll never know. But yeah, it's like, what were they doing giving him Dak? Like, come on. Like, anyway. But seriously, rest in peace, Dak. You lived honorably.
Well, in Dak's defense, Luke was the one piloting it, and he got shot from behind, so...
Yeah, Dak had actually very little control about what was
going on.
Yeah,
no control over that.
It's like he could
that.
Dodge it or anything. Yeah. Like, that dude is just dead.
Luke had no right to be annoyed at Dak for dying.
No, but he was. He was. This is pre-Dagobah, so he still hadn't really learned humility.
A slight path to the dark side. So. I mean, it could have been Wedge in there.
It could have been Wedge.
It's very, like, hey, Wedge, you're an awesome shot. Stay with me.
Yeah. Nope.
Riding the snowspeeder with me. And I think he would have been dead because
Luke's not as good still kind of has the Force at this point, so he may have known that this was this battle was doomed, you know? So he's like, Wedge, you better not come with. You would die. I'm okay with Dak, though, because no one really likes Dak.
That's right. And, you know, and Dak can't fly, so he's just...
So he's got to just sit there and just sit back. I'm going to tell him when to deploy the tow cable. But, okay. So that's your number five. I'm going to go with my number five, which is also the beginning in Hoth. But this is before the Empire gets there, when Luke is actually attacked by the Wampa. And he is in the cave, and he's hanging upside down. By the way, I saw, this was on a Reddit post a few weeks ago, someone has the action figure of Luke from that Hoth, you know, in the coat and whatnot, and put his feet in an ice cube and froze it over, like, the rack in their freezer. So he's hanging upside down with ice cubes on his feet, hanging from the freezer, and he's just there all the time. He's just a hanging Luke, which I thought was, like, amazing. But anyway, it makes me, like, want to kind of find that figure and do that. But, so this is my number five moment. It's when he's hanging there, and it's, like, this, like, really scary moment when this big, like, this dude from the Matterhorn ride at Disneyland is just, like, yeah, going to town on his Tauntaun, just, like, you know, eating... And Luke is there knowing, like, if he doesn't do something quick, he's going to die. And this is the first real, true Force moment we get where he tries to reach for his lightsaber. And he's trying, and he's trying, and he's trying. And then Wampa looks up and sees that something's going on and makes his way over. And at the very last second, he's able to use the Force to pull the lightsaber in, cut his feet loose, and then... attack the Wampa, and it was like literally the last second, and it's like a really tense moment. Yeah. But the reason why it's significant, it's my number five, is at this point the only time we've seen Luke use the Force is when he's got the shield blasters down on the Millennium Falcon, and Han Solo called it beginner's luck, and that's a very light moment of the Force. And then of course when he shoots into the Death Star, and when Obi-Wan tells him to use the Force, and he turns off his little machine in the X-Wing and then just shoots the torpedoes into the Death Star. So those are the moments at this point that we've seen Luke use the Force. So this is the first time we see him physically move an object into his hand, and we know now, like, you know.
I didn't even know you could move objects with the Force.
Oh, yeah,
I
mean, right.
I knew you could strangle people with it, but...
Oh, no, that's a good point.
I was like, wait, what is he doing? Like, he's not going to be able to reach that. Why is he stretching
out? Oh, interesting. It's funny looking back on that, because it's hard for me to remember seeing Empire Strikes Back before I had seen Return of the Jedi, and you know, it's all mixed into one as a kid, but... Did Vader not move anything in A New Hope?
No, he didn't. And Obi-Wan never said, hey, you know what? By the way, you can pick things up with the Force.
Yeah. Yeah, this is going to be really useful.
Yeah, you can pick up apples and, like, cut them with knives and then deliver them off.
Feed them to...
Wow. Deliver them across the table to your girlfriend. It's really good.
Obi-Wan would kill me.
Really good use of the Force.
So this kicks off Luke's journey in this episode, right? His arc, which is training to be a Jedi. So that's my number five. So... What's on your list?
My number five, because I've been thinking about where I'm going to put everything. Okay. So my number five is Dak getting shot by an AT-AT. Actually,
Dak's certain doom.
Now, I don't really know, like, what happened. Did he get shot or did Dak do it? Did he, like, you know, fire at one of the wings? Or
he could have ricocheted.
Was it Dak's fault? Because... I'm looking at the AT-ATs, and they're shooting the guys on the ground, and those blasts are kind of big. So if the snow spear's getting hit by that, the whole thing's blowing up.
Yeah. Mm.
So what happened? Bumbling Dak did. He was an idiot.
It's a misfire.
No, but actually, just watching the AT-ATs just light things up and just blowing up stuff and taking out those, their dish network.
Not even just Dish, but DirecTV as well.
Yeah, the DirecTV. It's just, they have us up there.
Back at their old base, like, oh, come on. They're like trying to change the channel. It goes like to snow screen. Like,
you see these lasers come out from those things, and they hit the kneecap on the AT-AT, and it doesn't do anything. So I'm like, oh, it wasn't actually a laser. It was trying to get a signal. So, yeah, I saw that.
Speaking of the moment, like, so I downloaded Battlefront last night, the first. You know, first instance I could on EA Access, and I can't tell you the amount of fun I have being in an AT-AT and just been mowing down the rebel scum. I'm just like, you guys all deserve this.
You should have.
You guys wouldn't toe the line. And now I'm here to, for justice. It's weird how quickly I can talk myself into the Empire not being so bad and kind of being justified. But anyway, that's good. That was your number five. Great. Number four, Brandon.
All right. Number four for me is there's a scene which, like, it's kind of recurring throughout the movie, but, like, the Millennium Falcon not working very often, especially with, like, the hyperdrive. But, like, Leia is, like, constantly, like, badgering Han about it, and it's when they're being followed by a Star Destroyer, and he's just like, oh, this bucket of bolts got a few surprises left. Yeah. And then he's like, all powered, like, forward shields, and he turns into attack position on the thing. And then the Star Destroyer's like, it's moving to attack position, but then, like, maneuvers, obviously, you know, to where attaches himself to the Star Destroyer. But I thought it was, like, I really liked that moment, because it was, like, a Han cleverness moment, like, you know, no one knows what he's thinking, but he's like, no, I'm turning this thing around, I'm headed straight for the Star Destroyer.
Yeah.
Like, just brilliant and...
do what they least expect.
Exactly.
Oh, no, that's good. That's great. My number four, also in the Millennium Falcon, it's actually just the asteroid field sequence. Them kind of on the run. Going through it, you know, C-3PO giving him the odds. Never give me the odds! and the whole thing was amazing. And it's amazing that, like, about half this movie, they're on the run in the Millennium Falcon. Like, Leia, Han, C-3PO. And, like... the whole sequence, I think, is amazing, especially the song, the Asteroid Field song.
Yes.
The soundtrack is, like, perfect, and it's so iconic.
So fantastic.
I can be anywhere, and if I hear that song, I'm like, I'm in an asteroid field. You know, like, I immediately recall it, and that's, you know, I think a sign of a good score. And then, of course, like, the hiding and eventually thinking they've come to safety, yet, as we learn in The Empire Strikes Back, they are never safe, even when you think you are. And, yeah, so that's my number four, so...
Yeah, so spoiler alert, that's my number three.
Oh, great.
Because this is the first time we really see the Millennium Falcon in action, because he's talking about, Han's always talking about its maneuverability, its speed, and all these things. And, you know, prior to this, everyone's just talking about how much of a hunk of junk it is. And it's just, like, broken down and just always just messed up. But you're seeing it just, like, moving in and out of these asteroids and all these TIE fighters trying to keep up with it. And they're just, like, crashing into stuff. And it's really awesome because, I mean, looking back at that scene, you're like, okay, out of that original Star Wars trilogy, that's the scene which had to have been the most inspiration for the original Star Tours at Disneyland.
Yeah, no, totally.
And
there's
just something so awesome about that, because looking at sci-fi films prior to that, you don't have anything like that. We have this whole, escape scene going through these asteroids, and just so much is going on. And it's just, I don't know, and the score going with it, it's just one of those fantastic moments.
Like, no, it's great.
I don't know, the more I talk about it as my number three, I'm tempted to just move it to my two.
Is he going to do it?
Okay,
it could happen to my two.
It's number two!
It's number two!
You bring up a really interesting point, because if you really think about it, in A New Hope, you have a whole lot of Han talking about how amazing that ship is and what it can do.
Yeah.
And really, it's other, like, than it going to, like, warp speed, you know, like hyperdrive, like, that's the only thing amazing it really does. Yeah. That, you know, all it does is it gets sucked into the, you know, magnetic pull of the tractor beam and the Death Star.
Right.
But as, you do not see that thing in action. This is the first time we see it really, really roar. So that's it. No, that's a great point.
I mean, you look at, like, okay, so there are all the TIE fighters that are attacking it during New Hope, but it looked like he just kind of parked it in space and they got on the guns and shot him as they're flying around him.
Yeah,
no, exactly. Yeah, so. That thing was just like, it might as well have been stationary. It wasn't exactly maneuvering around him. But you had said that was your number three, so let's also get your number four.
Okay, my number four. Now I'm trying to remember what. You know, okay, also involving the Millennium Falcon, just the flight into... Cloud City.
Oh, yeah.
Bespin. Because that was just kind of cool. Like, really cool scene. It's flying and it's landing and just, like, getting off on that platform and approaching Billy Dee Williams, who I think is totally awesome and needs to come back for the new trilogy. I want Billy Dee.
Yeah.
Give me Billy Dee.
And believe me, Billy Dee wants to come back. Believe me. Oh, man.
I'm not sure what he's doing. The last thing I remember him in was... Batman with Michael Keaton. He played Harvey Dent for, I think, 30 seconds.
Yeah. So very short Harvey Dent in the Tim Burton Batman.
That's kind of tough.
So I like that you bring up Cloud City. I don't have any Cloud City anywhere on my list. So I think it's worth noting that up to this point in the Star Wars, you know, well, specifically in this movie, the two planets that we've seen are Hoth and the Dagobah system, which are not very beautiful. I mean, you've got a swamp and you've got snow. And then you get Cloud City, so you get Bespin, right, which is unbelievably gorgeous. And you get these new little, like, two-pod orange ships. Yep. You get this whole world, and you're introduced to a whole... all of a sudden, the world gets a little bit bigger. Mm-hmm. I think that, the movie needed that at that moment, because it was like, oh, is every planet just kind of, eh?
Yeah, we got snow, snow, sand, and mud.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. And then Yavin, at that point, Yavin's atop the power rankings for most beautiful planet, right? Like, well, before that's because Alderaan was destroyed, but Yavin 4 or whatever, at that point, was the only one that was like had any real greenery. So,
That's true, and it just looked like downtown Sacramento, so...
Yeah,
a bunch of trees and
it's true.
It's
like they shot in Guatemala or something. But every time I see it, all I see is a bunch of trees and think, yeah, that's Sacramento.
Yeah, city of trees.
I'm just gonna tell myself I filmed this in Sacramento. All right, Brandon, your number
three.
Let's hear it.
Okay, my number three is the classic Han about to be frozen in carbonite scene. Yeah. So that made it to my third, just especially because the. Princess Leia line, like, Han, I love you, and Han, I know.
Yeah. That's my number two.
Okay. So I figured it was up there in some of our tops, but that one is definitely my third. So.
Yeah. Well, it's amazing because at that point in the movie, you're like, only bad things have really happened, and you're like, okay, how are they going to save the day? Is Luke going to come in? We know Luke's there, right? Mm-hmm. But he's doing that. He's got his confrontation with Vader, but maybe he makes it back and he won't get frozen in carbonite, right? But, like, no, it's certain.
Yep.
It's happening. Mm-hmm. The classic line, I love you, I know, which was the perfect Han Solo response. And, of course, as the story goes, his response was supposed to be either I love you too or something to that effect. And of course, Harrison Ford's like, since I'm just Han Solo in real life, this is what I would say. Which
bold move, but the right move.
it's such a good line. It's a really powerful moment because he comes out and, you know he's alive, which gives you hope, but he doesn't look good.
Nope.
You got to think, if I'm getting lowered into the carbonite chamber and they're about to hit the button, I'm thinking, what's my carbonite pose? Han clearly wasn't thinking about it because he just kind of has this, oh, my hands are up and I don't wish, maybe this will stop it from freezing me, and it doesn't. But I'm thinking, like, do I give the, like, maybe double barrel middle finger? do I stick my tongue out? Am I just giving a smile, like, I don't give a crap? Like, I want to give Jabba the Hutt something to look at that's going to make him mad. Right? Like, like turn around and moon him, you know? Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
Like, you truly haven't defeated me.
Exactly. Like, I'm smiling because I know I'm getting out of this thing because I'm friends with the Jedi.
Yeah, I just don't know why he kept his mouth open. What does carbonate taste like? Not very pleasant.
Yeah. Yeah. I really wish that would have been the first thing he said after he's melted. Like, oh.
It's sucking on terrible. A penny for 3 years or however long.
And I can't see. So that's my number two. So I was just going to parlay it into that. But my number three is I'm going to go with the Darth Vader and Luke saber fight. So I didn't mention, I actually told each of you when you came up with the list of five that we are not counting the Luke, I am your father moment.
Yeah. Okay. Yep.
So if you were all thinking we were all leading that as number one, I'm sorry. It was ineligible because it's clearly everyone's number one.
Yeah.
That is the number one scene. It's not even like an opinion. That's just what it is. Mm-hmm. So discounting that. All right. So now you guys know that.
And that one's a little different. The lightsaber battle is actually my number two.
So. Oh, it is your number two. Great.
Yep.
Well, I don't know if the saber fight's on your list. Maybe we talk about it together, but.
It might be.
Well, go ahead and tell us now. the saber fight is significant because it is the best saber fight we've seen yet,
so far,
right?
Yeah.
Because we've had a very old Sir Alec Guinness and a very timid Darth Vader, as I've mentioned several times now, kind of a weak saber fight. That's as much as we've seen. Of course, we've seen the training on Dagobah with the saber, but like no real fight.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But this one was like good. This one was like... It's not, we've talked about the prequels doing some of the best saber fights, right? So it's not necessarily that good because they didn't have the choreography down quite yet. But this was really, really awesome. And I loved Luke kind of like disappearing, jumping out of nowhere. It was just kind of like, how is this going to end, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Really great saber fight scene.
Yeah, that was actually my number one.
Oh, it is?
Oh.
Yes.
All right.
Okay.
Tell us
that was
why.
A good choice. I was debating between that.
Mainly because, I mean, you look at the fight that we saw previously with Obi-Wan Kenobi, and I'd like to, you know, think that maybe he was just, you know, giving the old guy a bit of a break. He's like, oh, man, he's really old, and, you know, and I'm going to kill him.
He's used to be my master.
Yeah, so I'm not going to go so hard on him. But, like, looking at Darth Vader, it's like, okay, so he's a big, giant, clunky robot. Probably can't move all that well.
Yeah.
And then we have this, wait, he can, like, kind of fly / glide.
Yeah.
And he's, like, moving objects and totally, like, he just comes more across as, like, this big, imposing force. And it was awesome. And Luke's, like, doing all these little flips and stuff like that. And you can see more of his little acrobatic Jedi speed and leap ability.
Yeah, and Vader has kind of this stoic look. Obviously, there's a mask, so. Yeah. But, like, the stoic look of kind of like, all right, I'm just going to let you do all these little flippy things, and let's get all this out now.
He's like, all right, that's impressive.
Destroy you. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Most impressive.
And he has that line about him not yet being a Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
You bring up another great point about just this imposing sheer brute strength and power of the Force that, you know, it's like, I can't come up with a scenario where Luke actually comes out of this beating him right now.
Right. Like, down to the very last end of that fight, Darth Vader's just kind of hammering at his lightsaber.
Yeah.
He's like,
oh yeah,
I'm not even really bothering to actually swing it at him. I'm just going to keep hitting his lightsaber and just kind of show him, hey, kid, you don't have, you know, the strength to beat me. He's like, you know, I'm fine. I'm going to take your arm off. Bam. Take your hand.
And so he takes his own son's hand. That's the worst part is he cuts his hand off, and then tells him that he's his dad.
Yeah. Like, you know what? Sorry.
I know it sucks not having a hand, but even worse, I'm actually your dad.
Same thing happened to me. You'll get over it.
Yeah. So I know we did the sound effects. We kind of all gave those a go. Can we all do our best Luke finding out Vader's your father impression? No. That's not true. That's impossible. That's mine. Well, I laugh at Mark Hamill for that, but really, it's kind of good. Like, he did kind of a good job in the scene. It's a little bit whiny, but actually, I think it stands. It really holds up. It's good.
Yeah, I agree. But, all right, especially because, like, what would you do with that face? You know, he's got that lower lip just, like, hangs down there.
He's crying.
For days. Yeah. He's just gripping his against whatever that is.
So, I want one of you to try it, because we're not moving forward until you
do. No. That's not true. That's impossible.
Oh, even better. I would say that was better. Oh, yeah, that was really good.
He's nailing it with the sound.
The impossible was spot on. Oh, my gosh. On. That was well done. I'm glad you did that. Glad you did that. I'm not going to make you do it, Brandon, unless you feel strong about it.
I was going to take a stab at it, but that destroyed me.
You're not beating that. Yeah.
No, that's no one's beating that. Nothing stronger than
well
that.
Done. Well done. So, then do you have one left on your list, then? That was your number one.
Oh, yes. Yeah, the Dagobahian sabbatical.
Okay.
Now, we kind of looking at the prequel Yoda.
Yeah, yeah.
And looking at Return of the Jedi Yoda.
Not the same thing.
A little bit later.
The prequel
first off, I like the puppet.
Oh, yeah.
I know.
We're all team puppet.
Yeah. Totally.
Yes.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Let's get rid of the CG Yoda.
Oh, no, totally.
In episode one.
We don't need a Yoda that has backflips around Count Dooku. No thanks.
So,
and he's a cane.
Yoda probably hasn't seen people in like 20 years at least.
Yeah.
So he's kind of a little kooky.
I have a feeling he's okay with that, though.
he's like, you know what? I've been talking to the Force, so I'm pretty good with that. And he's probably got a bunch of his ghost friends hanging around.
Yeah. No, he's got a ghost.
We've got Qui-Gon Jinn, Mace Windu, Ki-Adi Mundi.
With his triple forehead.
They're all there talking to him, except the Mace Windu is the Tupac Shakur version, so he at least has, you know, some entertainment there. And he's a little crazy. He's like raiding Luke's backpack. Luke's just kind of annoyed. He's like, oh man, what is this like little tiny toad dude doing? Yeah. And he's fighting with my robot, with my droid. He's stealing my food. Yoda's banging on the thing with his cane. And he's just, like, Yoda's just there to, you know, cause mischief and run amok.
Yeah, and he's there to he's honestly there to piss off Luke and see how quick he is to anger. Really?
Yeah, really. Yeah. That's like his first Jedi test right there. Yeah. He's like, I'm gonna annoy you.
Yeah, let's see how much you can handle.
Yeah,
see what you can take.
Yeah, that's really what, yeah, totally. So it's the whole, you're talking the whole Dagobah scene.
Yeah,
because my number one takes place on Dagobah, and I'll get details.
So does mine.
Okay.
Just.
Oh no.
I'm not gonna say the whole Dagobah scene. I'm just gonna say our introduction to Yoda.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go with just that.
Gotcha. You know
okay,
that.
That's
so for a movie and for a series really full of reveals. Vader's his father. Leia's his sister. Yoda being Yoda is the underrated reveal there, because when you first see Yoda, all you know is that Obi-Wan has guided him to the Dagobah system because this, like, you know, one of the greatest Jedi Master ever is in isolation there, and he's going to go train, and you're like, awesome. He's going to go down with this warrior. He's going to become a Jedi. And the last thing you think is that this is going to be weird little green toad man. So when the thing comes up, it looks like something that would be native to that planet, and then it's just some little pest.
Yeah.
And it honestly, no, like, I do remember thinking, like, that's not going to be
Yoda. That's not.
Yeah, and then it is, like, I love the fact that they have, you know, the idea that anyone can be a Jedi. Doesn't matter what, like, you know, what species or race, alien race you are. Even the smallest thing could be the greatest Jedi.
Yeah, I was going to expect, you know, this Jedi Master was either going to be Clint Eastwood or Burt Reynolds.
Oh,
no, so
that would've been awesome.
Yeah,
Burt Reynolds. Hey, what took you so long? Dirt Ferguson. just like, I imagine Norm MacDonald sitting down there. But that's good. So you're number one, my number one. Let's see if it's the same Dagobah scene.
Okay, my number one scene, Dagobah scene, is Yoda lifting the X-wing.
Yep.
I'm assuming
my number one.
Okay.
100%. Yep. Definitely my number one.
Yep.
Well, we can talk together about it. What's amazing about this is we've seen Luke, which really, again, he kind of has a bad time here. Mm-hmm. He has that traumatic moment where he takes, you know, he fights that fake Vader and the mask underneath is him. It's kind of a scary scene. I remember as a kid, that was pretty, you know, pretty terrifying. You've got Obi-Wan and Ghost Obi-Wan and Yoda being like, don't go to Cloud City to save your friends.
Yeah.
We're telling you right now, two people who can see into the future, don't do this.
Yeah.
And he does it anyway. Like, that's pretty crazy. Like,
mm-hmm.
if those two guys are telling me, like, don't bother, I'm going to be like, yeah, you know what? I'm going to take your word for it. I'm not going to go back.
Wait, I'm going to trust the best Jedi ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Two of the best.
Yeah.
And yet, no, he cares that much about his friends. And he feels that, like, overwhelmed with everything that's been going on that he goes anyway. And obviously we know what happens.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be really curious to see what happens in the movies if he doesn't go, you know. I mean, Han still gets frozen in carbonite. But anyway, so, but the scene where Yoda takes it out, it's significant because Luke is trying and trying and trying to lift the X-Wing. Did I say X-Wing?
It's X-Wing.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. I thought I said something else earlier. But he lifts it out and it's a TIE.
It's a Y-Wing.
So he lifts the X-Wing, or Luke attempts to, and he just can't do it. And I mentioned this on the previous pod, on a new pod, how kind of whiny and immature Luke is in A New Hope. He's more mature now in Empire Strikes Back, because 3 years have passed since the events of the Death Star explosion.
Yeah.
But still, he's immature when it comes to ways of the Force. He gets very frustrated easily, he's very impatient, and he just kind of gives up, and then Yoda is just like, all right, step aside. Like, check this out. This little thing, and this is the first real powerful Force movement or scene we see with Yoda, right? He lifts the entire thing out. And this really kind of, like, what I love about it is it's not like he just lifts it with ease. Like, it's like, oh, let me just wave the wand like in Harry Potter and something happens. Like, it really looks like he's channeling something and struggling, and then eventually, like, really gets it out. It almost looks like this physical experience, almost like, oh, the Force isn't easy even for the best. Like, it's something you really have to focus on. But if you do, the smallest little guy can lift an entire ship out of the water. And then my favorite line, which is why this is number one, is Luke saying, I don't believe it, and then Yoda saying, that is why you fail. So That is like the microcosm of Luke's arc in The Empire Strikes Back, right? And then Return of the Jedi, we get the version of Luke that does believe, right? And then the rest goes on. But that is why you fail. It's a super powerful moment. Love that scene.
Yeah.
Anything
but that? He settles back into that kind of doubt and fear and stuff, which is, you know, how he ends up becoming Kylo Ren in The Force Awakens.
This is the first foreshadowing of the Kylo Ren, Luke is Kylo Ren.
Yep. Especially him leaving, they're like, don't leave, you'll turn to the dark side and you'll have a great episode.
No, seriously, don't go, because we know you're going to be Kylo Ren in episode 7. To be clear, here on the Brave Little Podcast, we absolutely do not subscribe to the idea that Kylo Ren is Luke Skywalker. Anyone telling you otherwise has no idea what they're talking about. That caveat. But Brandon, it was your number one. Oh, did you have anything else to add to it?
No. Well, ultimately, just the idea of just Luke being so whiny and so impatient.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't know. It's so like, I was, like, screaming at the screen, like, saying, like, this is, like, the master of all Jedis. Like, you have got to understand, like, this little green thing is, like, the best there ever is. And he's just, like, Luke's impatient. He's like, I can't do it. It's impossible. If this guy's telling you it's possible, it's possible. Yeah. And then just to have him being, like, almost, like, putting him in his place, like, he just lifts it out, sets it down, and that line is definitely epic. Just like, that's why you fail.
Yeah. So good.
You know, this line, what other line is kind of cool that a lot of people just kind of forget about is when Luke's just like, I gotta go save my friends, and he's taking off in his X-Wing, and you have Obi-Wan Kenobi is talking to Yoda, and he's saying, he is our last hope, and Yoda says, no, there is another.
Yeah,
and that's I think Rey, so many people kind of forget about that. It's like, wait, what?
Yeah, I didn't. Yeah,
what's funny is we don't learn about Leia being a sister till Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm wondering, the people who saw that in theaters were they all like, wait, hold on, WTF? What does he mean? Who's the other? Like, does Han Solo have the Force? Like, the obvious is not, you know, obviously thinking Leia because you don't know they're related. You have no reason to think she has the Force. So it could be anybody, right? It could be anyone. Yeah. It's like Chewbacca.
They don't mention like females having the Force. So it's like, you know, you only see like males in the moment having the Force. So.
Yeah, my bet would be on Wedge, so.
Yeah. Or maybe it was Dak. It's like, no, there's another. And Obi-Wan's like, no, he actually died earlier today.
He survived. He survived.
Yeah, he's Dak.
Could you imagine?
There was Dak. Like a really strong roll cage on the inside of that snow speeder.
He wasn't crushed.
Oh, gosh. Well, that's a great list. We've been recording over 40 minutes, close to 50 minutes, and so I don't want to go crazy long, but we do have one other thing I wanted to talk to you guys about, and that actually has to do with the prequels. We got a tweet from one of the listeners of the podcast, a guy by the name of Rhett, who I've mentioned on the podcast before because I actually went to school with him in the advertising program at BYU. And so he tweets in from time to time, and he's the one who asked this question to me, and it's a really good question, and it's probably the type of thing we could dedicate an entire podcast episode to. But he asked, in regards to, you know, the three prequel episodes that we did, all that coverage, he asked me if you could redo the prequels. Like, if Disney came out and been like, okay, we're taking a mulligan on those prequels, we're going to consider them not canon, just like the expanded universe, whatever, and we're going to redo the prequels. Rhett asked, who would you have direct each one? And who would you recast in some of the major roles? So, and he also asked about, like, who'd you have write them? I'm not going to go into the writing part, but I did ask you guys to ask about the directors for each one. Mm-hmm. And then also who's going to play each of the main characters. I didn't specify all the main characters. I let you pick which ones you wanted to cast. I personally went with casting Obi-Wan, Anakin, and Padme. I kind of left it at that and then picked a director for each one. So I'm going to go through mine, just top to bottom. And then, so we won't necessarily alternate on each character like we did on our list of five. So I'm going to go through mine, and then each one of you go through all of yours, and I'll try not to take too much time.
Okay.
But I'll give you kind of my reasoning for why I picked the directors. A lot more thought went into the directors than the actors, but I think the actors are still pretty good. In fact, let me start with the actors. I didn't pick a young Anakin. I picked Attack of the Clones, Revenge of the Sith version of Anakin. This one is my weakest pick, but I actually don't totally hate it. If I spend a little more time thinking, I know I could come up with something better. But I'm going with Miles Teller. Miles Teller. I see the look on your faces. So Miles Teller, he may be a scumbag in real life. I don't know. But I think he has like that. I think what Anakin needed that Hayden Christensen didn't bring is like even like a sarcastic, dry wit that Miles Teller in every single movie, he kind of plays the same character, except Whiplash, where he's really good and he's quite different. But I want a little bit of humor out of that role more than Hayden Christensen gives. I mean, he gives, trust me, Hayden Christensen offers plenty of humor.
but not on purpose.
Not on purpose. I don't like sand. It's coarse. It gets everywhere.
It's irritating.
But Miles Teller, I feel like he could give both that and seeing him in Whiplash, he has an intensity in that movie that I think would be required to play Anakin. So I actually do think he would be capable of doing it. He could bring that darkness to the role. So that's why I picked for Anakin. For Obi-Wan Kenobi,
I might as well just throw it in there.
Because you also had Miles Teller?
Miles Teller
you're
was
kidding.
My... No joke.
Preston,
for me, it was definitely...
You're joking. No.
Anakin Skywalker, Miles Teller.
Oh, our other two are different, which is
it was, okay. For me, it was the same too. I mean, because his performance in Fantastic Four
was so
amazing. Actually, no, I didn't go with Miles Teller. I actually went with an actor that I think is far more versatile. He is known for these really unique characters, one from the other. He never plays the same
person. Steve Buscemi, please tell me.
No. Lazy eye Steve Buscemi from Mr. Deeds. So, because he's fantastic. He's not in enough things.
And who is it?
Jesse Eisenberg.
Oh, stop it.
Darn it, I was thinking about that earlier.
Skyler's banning you forever from coming onto the pod ever again.
Mark Zuckerberg.
Huge Jesse Eisenberg fan. Because I think he needs to have a little bit of a comeback, and Star Wars could maybe do that for him because another franchise didn't. But it's not because he isn't a good actor. I think he's a good actor, but I want to go with Andrew Garfield.
Not bad.
I was thinking not that when you bad. Started to say that, I was like, he's probably thinking Andrew Garfield.
Yeah. Andrew Garfield, he's a good actor, and he got done wrong a little bit in that Spider-Man situation. Yeah. Even
Spider-Man
though I horrible. I like the Amazing Spider-Man.
But the first, Amazing Spider-Man.
It still
and second.
Shouldn't have been made. Didn't need to be made.
Yeah,
wish it would have never been made.
I still liked
Andrew Garfield. That's so good. Oh, I that's so good.
Yeah.
Ooh, I could be talked into that over Miles Teller. that's funny. I said we weren't gonna go in turn on each.
Yeah, I know, but because it was since mine was Miles Teller, yeah.
So my Obi-Wan Kenobi. I will say that it could be. You could easily put Ewan McGregor in there. Again, and he would be able to do just fine. But I'm going to recast it because now we have Michael Fassbender. And I actually think he would be incredible as Obi-Wan Kenobi. Plus, he's British. And anyway, I don't need to tell you why he'd be an amazing Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah.
You know why.
Mm-hmm. I would want Michael Fassbender as a villain, though.
Yeah. He could look.
He's going to replace General Grievous.
General
Grievous isn't going to be a robot.
He could be General Grievous without emphysema or tuberculosis.
Or maybe he'll replace
a robot.
But.
Count Dooku.
He could be any. Honestly, Michael Fassbender could be a general for the Imperial Army, like a Grand Moff something. He could be anything. So that's what I have for Obi-Wan, and then for Padme, I have Emily Blunt.
That's a good choice.
I went British again. Dark hair, and she's two things: an incredible actress. Okay, yeah. She's very good. Obviously, she's very attractive, and I think you need that for the mother of, not to say Natalie Portman wasn't, but you need that for the mother of Princess Leia, or now General Leia, excuse me. We just found out that she doesn't go by Princess in the new movie. It's just General.
Yep.
And she is, I think right now, one of the best action movie stars. Period.
Oh, right.
Not female action movie stars. I'm talking about action movie stars, period. She is awesome. Edge of Tomorrow, Sicario. Yes. She is... one of my favorites right now. So, and I think that Padme character needs to have a little bit more warrior. And so I think Emily Blunt would be awesome in that role. So those are the actors. So now the directors. Now for the sake of this exercise, it's still going to be Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones, Revenge of the Sith. Of course, will be completely rewritten and done way better, but the same basic structure or plot point is going to be the case in each movie. In terms of Phantom Menace is about discovering Anakin. Attack of the Clones is about the Clone War. Revenge of the Sith is about Anakin, descending into the dark side and becoming Darth Vader. So I have I had a lot of directors that I thought could do a lot, all these different films. I wanted badly to do kind of a cutesy pick with number one and actually say I would want it to be directed by Pete Docter at Pixar, who has never directed a live action film. He's only directed the Toy Story movies. He directed Monsters, Inc. and Up, and then most recently Inside Out. I think he's a master storyteller.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering when he's going to venture into live action stuff, because Andrew Stanton, who did Finding Nemo and, you know, some of the other, and Wall-E, he moved over into, you know, motion pictures. He did John Carter, which is famously derided, even though it's actually kind of a good movie. Considered how much crap it gets. It's actually not a bad movie.
I enjoyed that.
But like Andrew Stanton did it. Obviously, Brad Bird did it with The Incredibles, and then he's done some good movies, Mission Impossible and then Tomorrowland. So I was going to say Pete Doctor, but I decided not to go with Pete Doctor. I'd also want to say I wanted to consider Ridley Scott, because he does space, he does sci-fi so good. But I went with Alfonso Cuarón as the director of Phantom Menace for a few reasons. One, he did Gravity. He does space really, really good. He has got a good sense for space, like space, especially cinematography, how to frame it. And Alfonso Cuarón did a Harry Potter movie. He did my favorite Harry Potter movie, which is the Goblet of Fire. Yeah.
I actually didn't know that.
I'm pretty sure it's Goblet of Fire, not Prisoner of Azkaban. I'm actually going to look that up and make sure that it was Goblet of Fire. I'm pretty sure it was.
Well, while you're doing that, you actually touched on my director.
Ridley Scott.
Yes.
I
picked Ridley Scott because...
For which one?
Good choice.
I'd want him to do all three.
You didn't pick three directors?
I didn't pick three directors.
Oh, okay.
I picked one. I picked Ridley Scott.
Well, then tell us why Ridley.
Mainly because... Now, George Lucas is not really a very good character director. I mean, Hayden Christensen, and the hard thing is, we know Natalie Portman is a great actress. We know that, but she just hammed it up just as much as Hayden Christensen did, especially in Attack of the Clones.
Yep.
Ridley Scott is known for turning out fantastic characters in his movies.
Yeah.
And he does science fiction. We need someone that's going to make the prequels look dirty. Because it was too clean. I mean, we needed more ships that had, like, you know, blaster scoring on them, and it's just there was too much shininess to those movies.
That's a very good point.
And you look at movies like Blade Runner, but the characters he's able to turn out. Look at Ripley from Alien.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
You have Michael Fassbender's character in Prometheus.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Damon from Martian. And he's just really good. I mean, especially looking back at Alien, that role was originally written for a man. And then ended up casting Sigourney Weaver instead. But it worked so well.
I think that's an awesome pick. And I'd heavily considered him for a lot of the same reasons. But you bring up a great point on the whole aesthetic and the dirt, the grime, the lived-in world feel.
Yes.
So, by the way, I looked it up. Prisoner of Azkaban. So a lot of you, some of you listening certainly knew that already. But no, so Prisoner of Azkaban is my favorite one. I always know it's the one that Alfonso did, because I remember it being the one that was like dark. Because if you rewatch the Harry Potter films, like the first two are just like very, very light and colorful and very kid-like. And then you get to the Prisoner of Azkaban, which, let's be honest, the book itself is also pretty dark. And they bring in Alfonso Cuarón. So... the fact that he could come into an existing franchise and offer a version of that story through his own lens and his artistic sensibilities, I think that would allow him to be able to succeed in a Star Wars universe.
Yeah.
He knows space. I do think generally the prequel trilogy should have a darker edge to it. The first one would be the lightest of them all because it's the child Anakin, but still a darker edge. So I think I would put Alfonso Cuarón. Now for Attack of the Clones, I'd mentioned how that... For those of you who might not know, it is my least favorite Star Wars film. I think the worst movie of all time.
It's the one I've seen, very painful. I mean, there's these moments where it's like really cool. You have all these clones, you know, fighting and a bunch of
it gets
a bunch of Jedis with lightsabers and Jango Fett's kind of fun, but
I guess the
whole love scene stuff is just very painful.
Yeah, it's. Boo. What I'd mentioned before, one of the big egregious error here is they showed us the beginning of the Clone War and it was lame. I want the Clone War to be this huge thing, and what we have is clones, and droids in this like arena, and it was just like, wait, what? This is not the high stakes thing that that Obi-Wan referenced in A New Hope to Luke talking about how he fought in the Clone Wars, and you're like, oh my gosh, what was that? You know, I've I know I've mentioned that a lot, but so this second movie, Attack of the Clones, I would want to be obviously much more focused on the actual Clone Wars. That would be the focus for me. And so I think the person that can actually do that very well when given the proper restraints is Peter Jackson. So Peter Jackson would do Attack of the Clones for me. Obviously would have to have something in the contract where he would not have final cut, and and we would have multiple people in the editing room to keep him in check when he gets out of line. Because I'd be afraid that he would immediately turn around and be like, so I've been thinking about Attack of the Clones. What if we did three movies for Attack of the Clones? Is there one? So I'd be like, stop right there, Peter. Peter, we talked about this. You signed the contract.
Heavily rely on CGI.
So this is the thing. A restrained Peter Jackson, which is the Lord of the Rings films, I think are masterpieces. Obviously, The Hobbit is an unrestrained Peter Jackson, much like George Lucas was unrestrained for the prequels, though the prequels were way worse than the Hobbit movies.
Yeah.
The Hobbit movies are nowhere near Lord of the Rings. So, obviously, with the right system in place, I think Peter Jackson could do such a good Attack of the Clones and do some incredible, incredible battle sequences.
Yeah, bring on a co-director, Bryan Singer, for when Peter Jackson needs to take a nap.
Yeah, when he takes a nap. Yeah, exactly. He gets tired, takes a nap. Bryan Singer
steps in.
I wonder how many people will understand that reference. It's like a behind-the-scenes King Kong featurette. Yes. It's going deep. So, all right, third film, Revenge of the Sith. Obviously.
Wait, hold on. Let's go back to Attack of the Clones. Can we just change the title to The Clone Wars?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Star Wars Episode 2, yes. The Clone Wars.
I'm absolutely in favor of that.
Good, yep.
Yeah. So,
and let's change some other things. Okay, the Gungans back from Episode 1, they're going to be larger, more imposing. They're not going to be Jamaican.
How about just make the Gungans whatever Jabba the Hutt is, okay? Whatever that is.
But I want them to have this big old fight with the droids. And the droids are all modeled after IG-88. They're not these weird things that are more comical than they are scary. Mm-hmm. And a big battle, and the Gungans are not throwing liquid electric balls. Whatever they're supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. So, I'm going to go quickly with my third one so you can guess get through yours. We're over an hour. But the Revenge of the Sith, which I would probably turn to, I would change it to Return of the Sith. I'm just kidding. That's a callback to George Lucas naming Return of the Jedi, Revenge of the Sith. Revenge of the Jedi first. And then changing it to Return of the Jedi because Jedis don't have revenge.
Yep.
So, I would pick for this film, since it needs to be the darkest, and I consider this to be he's actually one of my favorite directors, but I would do David Fincher for Revenge of the Sith. He would have a whole different aesthetic. It would be dark. It would be Anakin descending into the dark side and becoming Darth Vader. And I think he would have the perfect outlook to be able to make this a great movie. I tried to fit Christopher Nolan onto one of these films. But
he's going to want to make the story way too complex. It's going to go everyone's head.
I still think he would. I don't know. Yeah, ultimately, I feel strongly about the three I have. So, Preston, you talked about Ridley Scott. What about your actors?
My actors, okay, so I already talked about Andrew Garfield playing Anakin. I also casted young Anakin, too.
Oh, good, good. I'd considered it.
I went with Ty Simpkins.
The kid from Jurassic World.
Yeah, he wasn't.
You're kidding.
He wasn't annoying in that movie. Yeah. He actually worked
for it. Because dark.
With child actors, you really have to worry sometimes.
That's so funny.
I mean, they can't all be the Goonies.
I was thinking if I was going to cast young, I was like, well, how many people do I know that age? Aside from the kid from Jurassic World, I can't think of any other ones. I didn't want to pick him because he was the only one.
I know.
But it doesn't mean he'd be a bad one.
Yeah, so. That's kind of, I did that.
Okay.
I don't think of.
I was like, is there any
recent memory, a kid that can actually do this that wouldn't be annoying?
If age doesn't matter, obviously Haley Joel Osment would be the
That's true. Even though, I mean, yeah, he's a little bit chubby, kind of furry, he's got a beard.
Yeah, he's very old. Yeah. No, but yeah, take Haley Joel Osment from The Sixth Sense. I think he's got the darkness you need. So, what else you got? Did you change Obi-Wan?
If I would like to go with Ewan McGregor, but if we're going to change it, I'm going to go with Luke Evans.
Ooh, Luke Evans. Bringing it back to The Hobbit.
That is...
And
Bard the Bowman, right?
I could not figure out Padme Amidala to save my life. Oh, okay. I love your Emily Blunt idea. Oh. I'm going to steal that. And the only other person I cast was Mace Windu.
Oh, perfect.
I'm going to butcher his name. Idris Elba. Yeah.
Hey.
One of those is right. One of those. I don't know which one, but one of them is right. That's great. Oh, he'd be awesome.
That, I mean, I was thinking that.
Just
that
take Heimdall, awesome. You know, and that stoic, like, you know, committed to an order type of, you know, attitude.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great.
He's awesome. Yeah, he's go so Black Bond. That would have been a great choice.
Hashtag Black Bond.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, I think the eye is silent. It's just Driss.
Yeah.
It's Driss. It's Driss.
It's Drizzy Dree, I think. So, no, that's, oh, he'd be awesome in that role. No, that's a great call. All right, Bryn.
Okay. Well, I'll start with my actors, and so I chose like three, but actually, well, two of them were taken. Anakin Skywalker as Miles Teller, and surprisingly, Obi-Wan, if it wasn't going to be Ian McGregor, was Luke Heaven.
Oh! You're kidding.
I'm not kidding.
Okay,
let's stop.
Why do you guys like Luke Heaven so much?
You know, what role?
It's not Bard the Bowman.
He hasn't really done like anything like super like, oh my gosh, he's an amazing actor.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think it's because recency bias probably. He's British.
Well, what's the recency?
Yeah.
What exactly has he been?
Dracula Untold.
Earliest
week. I watched Dracula Untold.
Really?
Dracula Untold.
You're kidding. You're serious.
Last week I did. Yeah.
I do think he's a good actor, but I just watched
The Battle of Five Armies with my kids last weekend. Yeah. So I've kind of had a heavy dose of...
A lot of Luke Evans.
Luke Evans. Right. And he was also in the Fast and Furious movie this year, too.
Yep.
Nope, that was...
No, that was...
Previous year.
Jason Statham's younger brother.
Yeah.
But no, that was literally like...
He wasn't in a body cast.
That's true. He was in the hospital.
Yeah. But that it was the same reasoning. Like, yeah, he's British. He's kind of more recent. And I feel like this could be a really good breakout role for him. I mean, I still think he did great. And I liked him in The Hobbit. Definitely.
Yeah, sure.
But like... I still think that's it.
I can't believe my two brothers both picked Luke Evans. What an obscure decision. It's not a bad pick necessarily, although
no.
I'm going to stand by Michael Fassbender.
Yes. He was definitely in my mind as like, I could do that, but I was thinking, I wasn't really taking like age. I mean, I guess they're both kind of old, but I think Luke Evans would be good, like Jedi-esque.
Sure. I think
Luke Evans needs to have like some really good breakout role for him that isn't really, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think.
Kind of lame.
Interesting. All right. So did you have some...
All right, I'm changing mine to Benedict Cumberbatch.
Okay, there it is.
There we go. All right.
There it is. We had to get Benedict to the Star Wars universe.
He's got to be in there. Yeah.
Just be Sherlock. That's all you got to do. Just act. Just be Obi-Wan who's very good at figuring out clues.
He's Darth Maul. He was my Darth Maul.
So, Brandon, you pad me.
Okay. I have Emma Watson.
Oh.
Yep.
Hey, that's not bad.
I think she has the looks. I definitely think she's kind of up and coming, and everyone likes Emma Watson.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think that she would just do a really great job.
Yeah. And her and Miles Teller could definitely have chemistry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be great.
That's great. Wow.
So those are my three choices.
Okay. So your directors for the movies.
Okay. So these ones might be a little different, but, and again, some of you, well, my first one. Okay. So Phantom Menace, I would say Christopher Nolan.
Oh, you did.
I went there. I was like, should I go there?
I'm glad I didn't. So you did. That's good.
Because when you said, like, I didn't choose Christopher Nolan, I was like, oh, I did.
That's great.
You're like, people who knew space, Interstellar, obviously one of my favorites. Yeah. Absolutely loved it.
That would be a good Star Wars movie.
Yeah. But I think, fantastic. Like, it'd be good to start off with, like, character development and kind of a general story to, like, head off the prequels.
Yeah.
I think Christopher Nolan would do a great job.
Great.
So.
Great. Who you got for the Clone Wars?
And then Empire Strikes Back, I have...
No, Clone Wars.
Oh, my gosh. That's right.
Whoa.
Do not touch Empire Strikes Back.
Special edition of the Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, Empire Strikes Back, yeah.
So anyway. The Tauntauns are replaced with Velociraptors.
So much cooler. Tyson gets running.
Yes.
And then the Wampa's not going to survive that, so...
Yeah. I need to get this last name right, but Christopher McQuarrie?
Oh, Jack Reacher and the new Mission Impossible, Rogue Nation.
Yes. So, I definitely, the Mission Impossible Rogue Nation, I absolutely loved. And so, I was thinking if someone can do, like, a good story, I mean, if you can just mimic, I mean, obviously not mimic, but, you know, to make the Rogue Nation movie, absolutely loved it, I think that he could do a good job in the second installment, episode 2.
I really like that pick. Mm-hmm. I hadn't even considered. So,
and then Edge of...
He's a writer, right?
Yeah,
so he wrote the screenplay for The Usual Suspects.
Yes.
Kaiser Soze. So like, I mean, Christopher McQuarrie is like legit, both as a writer and director.
Well, I don't know. Looking at Attack of the Clones, I'm pretty sure George Lucas intended it to be more of a comedy. I don't know. I'll probably have to go with Edgar Wright.
You're jumping back in.
I'm changing mine.
He's throwing in his.
You're jumping back in. Well, I mean, sand is so coarse and it gets everywhere. I'm gonna throw that in as many places. It's so bad. So, all right, Revenge of the Sith. One more director.
And this one's a little more far fetched, but
this whole scenario is far fetched, by the way.
Jon Favreau.
Oh no, not far fetched. That's
you don't
great.
Think so?
No,
because I ultimately liked the first Iron Man. I thought he killed it in terms
great.
Of like
no, he's good
jumping
director.
Off the Marvel.
I liked Cowboys and Aliens too. Like, I mean, it's not,
not a lot of people like
movie,
that too.
But I enjoyed it.
I like that movie too. Yeah.
So I thought that he could do a great job at Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah.
So
well, there were rumors that he was in the mix for episode 7.
Oh.
Some say he turned it down. I think he claims he wasn't offered it. I don't know. But he was definitely in the conversation to direct that. And who knows? He could do one of the, like, the anthology films later down there. He'd be terrific for a Star Wars film. Same with Brad Bird, obviously. That's a kind of, you know, Brad Bird would have been terrific as well. But I like that. Jon Favreau,
mm-hmm.
Christopher McQuarrie, Christopher Nolan.
Yeah. Yep. And M. Night Shyamalan.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. M. Night Shyamalan. M. Night Shyamalan does the Christmas special. the Star Wars Christmas special. Throw him a bone. Throw a little twist ending. Awesome. Well, we went through all the lists.
Yep.
We talked about Empire Strikes Back. We're over an hour and ten minutes now. But did you guys have any other parting thoughts about the Empire Strikes Back? By the way, that conversation we just had about the prequels, I'm literally salivating. Imagining what this version, any of our versions of the prequels would look like. I'm like, oh. That's so good.
Please.
I wish so bad.
Please, Disney, just make it happen.
Disney, no one would complain.
Change up the droids.
No one would complain.
Make everything dirty.
Yeah, seriously, though. You make a good point on the shininess. I was like...
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's just a very polished, regal look. It's just really bizarre.
And why does the technology seem so far advanced than...
So, on a scale from 1 to 10, how hyped are you for The Force Awakens?
Uncomfortably hyped.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Me too.
That's to the point.
It's kind
I'm
of
scared.
A problem.
No, it's scary. I have broken on the scale of 1 to 10. I passed 10 so long ago that I'm in now the dangerous territory of like there's actually nothing that would meet my expectations.
I know that's
it would
what
be
I'm
a
saying.
Perfect movie. I'd say like, I want it a little more perfect. You know, like yeah. I need to simmer. You know, mm-hmm. I really do because
there's,
it's dangerous.
Yeah. There's no choice but for me to be disappointed. Because
yeah,
my expectations.
It's just, I hope I'm not disappointed too much. I'm only mildly disappointed.
It's either like disappointed or even if it potentially could be bad to the point where I'll be stubborn for like a couple of years saying it was amazing.
Yeah, we've talked about Phantom Menace. It took some time for a lot of people.
And I was
had
so
to
young.
Admit the fact that it wasn't good.
It was like an intervention. Like, hey, guys, you know, like Phantom Menace made down. Like, David's not good.
I don't even remember how young I was. I remember waiting in line with you guys.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We waited in line all day long.
That was amazing.
How
I loved Jar Jar.
How many hours were we in that Phantom Menace line?
So
we were the first. Were we the first ones or the second group?
I don't.
We were the first ones, weren't we?
It wasn't the.
We
it was the side of the building in between Taco Bell. That was it, right?
Yep.
Okay.
That's right. Back. Yeah. But way back when, like that line got huge. We waited for hours and hours and hours.
Huge.
So I had to convince myself that was a worthwhile investment of my time.
When in actuality, the only three good things come out of there were Ewan McGregor, pod racing, and Darth Maul.
Yeah, that's true. Natalie Portman. Natalie Portman.
Except she just hammed it up just as bad as Hayden Christensen did in Attack of the Clones.
Yeah, she's not good acting in this. Like people reference her as like, well, she's one of, like her career obviously recovered and she's had a great career since.
Yes.
But actually just. In a vacuum, looking at that movie, she's not good. She's one. She's part of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pumped every time. We're in the heat.
Oh,
we're in the thick of Disney releasing the TV spots, international trailers, all stuff dropping, and I'm thinking, okay, one of these things. I'm like a bubble that needs to burst, you know? And so each one of these things comes out. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna eventually see some sort of content or media that will make me go, oh. Are they really going to go with that in the story or something?
Yeah.
Or I'll see a scene where I'm like, oh, I don't know how I feel about that to bring me down. But no, everything just keeps amping up the stake. Like I'm
there's too much nostalgia in what's
the most
being
recent,
disseminated.
The most recent TV spot where you have a Lupita Nyong'o's character named Maz Kanata saying, I'm going to butcher the quote, but like I've lived long enough to see. The same eyes in different people. Like, I see your eyes. I know your eyes. And I'm just like it's perfect. I have a guess of who she's talking about. I have a guess of whose eyes they probably look like. You know, it's just, I'm dying over here, man.
And I'm looking at this Kylo Ren helmet you have on the table here. I don't understand why I'm convinced that he's a fantastic villain already. Like, I want the action figures.
We're thirsty, and hungry for a new for another Darth Vader. We're just assuming he's going to be as good as Darth Vader was, and that's totally not like a given, right? He could be kind of a wimp.
He could be whiny.
Just first off, do we know that he even needs the mask in the same way Vader needed his, or is it just? Just vanity.
I think it's vanity.
Just wants to look like Vader.
He's addicted because he's to Vader.
Related somehow to Vader, maybe?
There's some kind of...
Spoiler alert. We know nothing.
And I don't know, one of the theories going around is that the back of his helmet is just basically part of Darth Vader's original helmet.
Yeah, it's
melted to his own.
And I think that could very well be the case.
Yeah.
I mean, He's holding the melted Darth Vader helmet in the trailer, which leads me to believe he went down to Endor and dug that thing up, which is pretty committed. Dug it up before it melted all the way.
Killed a couple Ewoks.
Yeah.
Maybe blasted the planet.
Yeah.
Because the Ewoks were using it as a drum, I'm pretty sure.
Is it bad that it got way more sad when Ewoks were killed than when those little kid Jedis got killed in the prequels? Ewoks did the little thing
with they're little teddy bears.
They're throwing rocks.
Especially when like ATST big old blast, knocks those two guys and the other guy's like, oh, I'm okay. Hey, buddy, oh no.
He
just starts crying.
The saddest.
But what did what did the kid Jedis do? They're just a bunch of little entitled brats.
Mr. Skywalker.
Seriously,
Wait, what was that?
Mr. Skywalker. What are we going to do? Well, you're gonna shut the heck up. let's wrap it up. Seriously, this has been a blast. Thanks, guys, for coming on.
It's a pleasure.
Part of the reason why I love Star Wars is because I grew up watching it with both of you, and the whole experience growing up together, watching all the Star Wars movies, asking for all the Star Wars action figures for Christmas, playing every Star Wars video game.
I was the only one who opened the action figures because I was really young.
And in vintage fashion, right after we sign off here, we're all going to move over to the couch and play Battlefront.
Yes, we are.
And so
I want to give a little shout out to Grandma and Grandpa Orgel.
Oh, please.
They were the ones that first introduced me to Star Wars.
Well, I really hope they're not listening to the podcast, by the way.
The first time I ever watched it was in their cabin in West Yellowstone, and they were recorded copies on VHS tape, and I watched all three of them back to back.
Wow.
And it was awesome.
That's amazing. No, that's great.
That was great.
All right. Well, you guys have both listened, I think, to some episodes of the pod.
Yes.
And thanks for doing that, because I'm sure listening to your brother's voice just talk maybe isn't the most entertaining thing. But
well, it probably means more to us than other people. We're like, oh, it's, I don't know, we're nostalgic here.
Well, you know how we sound now. So, as we say,
hold on to your butts.
Thank you for listening to the Brave Little Podcast. Hold on to your butts.